Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out into the streets of Chicago on a beautiful December day. Lo and behold, I look to my right, and it's a fellow prophet of mine, the great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
Just living the dream here.
You know why I'm calling you a prophet? Because in our last episode, you had correctly predicted that the Bulls would win at least 1-2 versus the Miami Heat. And I just look in awe and admiration at your efforts. Welcome to the inner circle of prophets. And I have a certificate coming out to you from the science department over at Northeast Idaho. Incredible job. Let's give him a big hand. There you go. Yeah. Great job, my man.
Yeah, anytime you can predict 50-50 things right half the time, you deserve a certificate.
Hey, I take this stuff very seriously, and I was very impressed with that prediction because, you know what, I felt I was right on, too. I think in our last show, we both kind of, at the end of the show, said it's entirely possible they lose all these games, but you could still feel better about the team going forward. And I think not only did they lost most of them, let's be honest, they lost three out of the four, but big picture, I still feel pretty good about the team and the direction it's going in with the emergence of Kobe White as a superstar and Patrick Williams seems like approaching a pretty good player. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Williams has played better, looks solid. I mean, coming off one of the better games of his career in that last game against Miami, I don't know if you'd say it was the best game, but it's probably in the running for best game of his career. Probably top five for sure, at least. So, you know, that's positive. Kobe White has been very good for a pretty sustained stretch now. So it's not just, you know, a couple games. And he's making an impact even with his three-point shooting falling back to earth. And falling back to earth, I mean like 40%, which, you know, kind of feels like a sustainable rate. I think he's still probably over 50 for the last 12 games or so or something like that. But I want to say the last few games he's been closer to 40. So, yeah, I mean, those things look positive. I don't know if that changes my outlook of the team. Do you think Kobe White or Patrick Williams are 1-2 on guys who would lead you to the second round of the playoffs? I mean, certainly not a title. They're not that good. But, I mean, even would they be number 1 and 2 options on a second-round playoff team? I think, you know, probably not. But it is nice that some of our younger players are playing well, and maybe with a good draft pick, if we get a little lucky somewhere, you know, it's enough to start building a fresh team around and kind of have a change of the guards.
Well, I've been very bullish on Kobe White, as we both know, yeah, over the course of his career. On the CHDO pod that I was on recently a couple weeks ago, during that show, which really near the start of this run, I had said that I think there's a ceiling for Kobe White somewhere between CJ McCollum and Dame, somewhere in that pretty wide range. I think he's already clearing the CJ McCollum barrier, or at least approaching it, you know, especially if you look in the last, gosh, it's going on a pretty significant stretch here. The last 14 games, I'm looking at his three-point rate is 49.6%. You know, it's elite. That's as good as it gets in the NBA as far as shooting. I saw a stat recently that he was third in the league in total three-pointers, so he's shooting at a high volume. Only Steph was ahead of him and Luka. He's as good as it gets in the league right now, and he's 42% on the season. I mean, the guy's just proving he's an elite shooter from distance. And not only that, they're of a high degree of difficulty. They're of a deep range, often being pressured. Like, it's not just like wide open threes, you know, like Patrick to some degree, I think, is a benefactor of that. But, I mean, I'm just really high on where he's going. I agree with you. Like, he's not going to be the best player on a team that wins a title. But I do see a ceiling for him where he could be the second or third best player on a team that wins a title. And his regression to me this year has just been stellar. Like, in that last game, that drive, I don't know if you recall this drive he had. It was a high degree of difficulty where he kind of went to the lane, fade away. He banked it off it was kind of like a bank, contested bank. I think Butler was on him. I mean, that's a shot he wouldn't have probably made in his first 1, 2, 3 years. He's just getting better in every facet of his game, decision-making, passing, defense. I'm in love with the guy, and I hope you sound like you're starting to get pretty bullish on Kobe White and his future.
Sure. I mean, I've been excited about Kobe. We mentioned him in the preseason as like the guy we were most excited about taking a step forward. You were more high on him than me, but I was also pretty high on him. I mean, I think you might be jumping ahead a little bit. CJ McCollum averaged like 40% from three for like the last eight seasons and scored probably an average of 22 points a game over that stretch. Kobe this year is scoring 17.3 points a game, has never averaged 40% for a full season from three. I mean, let's not diminish the accomplishments of some other guys in the league, but yeah, Kobe is off to a great start. Let's see him sustain this for like a whole season. Let's see him get the volume up, and then we can start comparing him to CJ McCollum. And I think we got a long way before we get to Damian Lillard. But yeah, it's you feel a lot better about him today than you did at the beginning of the season, and we felt pretty good about him at the beginning of the season. You feel great about the contract he got, you know, from a Bulls perspective. So that's real positive. You know, the one thing that's kind of a negative about it is it's only 3 years long and he'll be an unrestricted free agent at the end. And our buddy Mark from Australia pointed out, it was my buddy Morton. I don't know if you and Morton are buddies. And Mark also mentioned it, but we can't actually extend Kobe White because of the 140% rule. Like his contract is going to be worth more than the max we can extend him. So he will make it to unrestricted free agency. There's no deal we can use to lock him up early. And that actually creates kind of a risk, which will, you know, create an interesting contract situation in a couple of years. But, you know, we'll see how everything is navigated. But I feel pretty excited about Kobe White. And it's nice to feel excited about one of the young guys that's still here under contract for a while.
Another player I wanted to talk about is Io. Io had a really poor 0-0 game. Somewhere in the middle of this stretch of pretty decent basketball for the beloved Bull. I can't remember off the top of my head which game that was. But then he comes back and plays very well, I think, at moments against the Heat. He's been really good for the most part this season. He's shooting 35% from three, which is up from last year. Still not great, kind of average overall. But he's been bringing it, I feel like, for the most vast majority of the season off the bench and really kind of fulfilling his promise as a role player off the bench.
Sure. I mean, I think has given you reasonable role player status. Yeah, I think it was the Milwaukee game that he put up the big line of zeros, and it was the win against Miami that he played really well and played a little bit less well in the loss. You know, I don't know. I think Io has been fine this season. We'll hope he keeps going forward. You know, one of the things I noted, God, this goes back several years. People were really amped about Io in his rookie year. I guess it doesn't go back that many years. And I had said, you know, Kobe White is actually the same age as Io, and age is a better indication of upside. And so people were kind of sleeping on Kobe White's potential. I don't know if you remember that conversation we had, you know, a long time ago in the midst of the Io stuff. And maybe I convinced you there and I got you back on the Kobe train.
I tried to forget about it, but because I still feel Io is a pretty high ceiling.
Yeah,
too.
I'm not
as high as Kobe's.
I'm not even trying to diminish Io. I guess all I'm saying is like, you look at guys and it's kind of like their age that determines a lot of like how much growth they have is pretty common. And I think in this case, you know, like Io is fine. He's 24, you know, or almost 24, be 24 in a couple weeks. You know, I don't know that you're going to see like massive growth from him. That's all. Like he's a role player. He's on a role player contract. That's great. I think he'll fit in and have a long career in the NBA. He'll be a solid player. You know, can do a lot of different things pretty well. Probably there's nothing he's just like really awful at. Like he's probably solid at kind of everything. And so, you know, he's a guy who can probably fit in the rotation of almost any team in the league. But I'm not sure he's in the top six of very many teams either. You know, so he's like a 7-8 guy, maybe a six guy, your sixth best guy, which isn't the same as your sixth man, but, you know, sixth best player on your team. Yeah, I think he's kind of in that 6-8 range on most teams in the league.
I think he has a ceiling as a rotation starter. So I think I am a little bit higher and bullish on him. I could see him at the age of 26, 27, 28, you know, averaging 10 to 15 points a game for a team playing stellar defense and being a valuable player. He's got a lot of great traits, athletic. He can switch on defense. He's a winner. He's not afraid. So I love Io, a little bit higher ceiling, but regardless, he's another piece on a very good contract that we have that I think we should be thrilled about with the progression he showed this season. And then finally, let's get to Patrick, because it is worth talking about. Like, that last game that he had against Miami was, to me, the best game by far for his entire career. I thought he played fantastic. I do feel still, and I said this before, like Patrick Williams is going to have games where he's going to score 20-plus because he's that good of a three-point shooter. He's proven that throughout his career, that he's been consistently over 40% from the three-point line. Good things will follow from that. When you get a lot of open looks in the game, you're going to go 3 or 4. You're going to go 5 or 6. You're going to get 15 to 20 points just from the three-point line if you're getting open looks. The other parts of his game I did not expect to come through, being aggressive, you know, finishing. And he's still struggling to a certain degree with that. But, my gosh, when he took Robinson, you know, on that nice little move, left-hand dunk, that's the kind of stuff you want to see more of. And you got to feel somewhat encouraged by his progression and maybe question, is it possible that he could be a rotation starter and not just a role player?
I guess to me, a rotation starter, and just even going back a second to what you said about Io, and a role player are the same thing to me. Like Patrick Williams, okay, to me,
yeah,
is
fair enough.
Patrick Williams to me is not going to be one of your top three players on a really good team, and neither is Io. And
I would concur.
Your fourth and fifth starter, those are rotation players to me. Like there's not a, on a good team, there's not a real big gap between your fourth and fifth starter and your first guy off the bench. Like it's usually just how you're balancing the skill sets and the positions and whatever. A lot of times the bench guy is actually better than your fourth and fifth starter, depending, you know, how your lineup goes. Like when Kobe White was not starting, I think he was still better than some of our starter players. I guess this year he's pretty much started all year, but like you get what I mean. Like there becomes like a balance in the,
yes,
in the lineup. And if you're overloaded at one position, you might have a really good guy coming off the bench. And in most teams, I think have that scenario where at least one of their bench guys is better than one of their starters. So I guess I agree with that on both guys. Like I think Patrick Williams can probably be a starter on a good team, but he's going to be like your fifth starter, maybe your fourth starter, depending on your stuff. You know, that's where I see him. Like, yeah, he had a good game, but he shot 8 of 10 from the field. You know, like if you shoot 80%, you're always going to have a good game. But like, that's not like a sustainable way to have a good game. It's not like he put up 25 points on 18 shots and was creating a bunch of stuff off the dribble. You know, he shot 4 or 5 from three. Defense and stuff, I think, is progressively getting better. You know, rebounding, I think, is getting a little bit better for him. So, you know, there is real improvement. I don't want to, like, make it sound like he's not improving. I think he is. You know, there's, like, so much hype about this guy every time he does, like, any type of good game at all. And, you know, it's like you go back 2 games before that, and he's 2 of 8 from the field with 2 rebounds, you know, 1 turnover in, you know, 31 minutes.
He didn't play really great in the first Heat game.
Yeah,
it was like
3 of 9
yeah, single,
in that
single,
one.
Single.
So yeah. Like, you know, I guess it's just like, yeah, okay, he had a game. Show me like 3 good games in a row before I'm going to like jump on the bandwagon of, you know, you're really making significant improvements. But I do see, you know, kind of like,
fair enough.
If we talked about Kobe White last year, like towards the end of the year, he wasn't putting up like monster offensive numbers, but we said like you could see his skills getting better. His ball handling was getting better. His defensive attention was getting better. Like he just was playing better. And I think the same is true of Patrick Williams right now. Like, I don't think it's all showing up in the stat sheet yet, but I do think he is playing better over the last stretch than he was earlier in the year. And some of that defensive stuff
no
is
doubt.
Getting better. And so those are positive signs. So I don't want to be like too negative on him either. I guess it's just like there's so much hope for him, I think, with certain people that when a little thing happens, like they overstate it. So I don't want to overstate it, but I also don't want to understate it. There is improvement, but it's still like trending towards, you know, like 4th or 5th best, 6th best guy on your team, like that kind of range is still like, feels like his ceiling to me. And his ceiling doesn't seem like top 3 guy on a good team yet.
Yeah. So I agree with 100% with everything you just said there. I still feel like right today, if you had a bet today, I think Kobe has the highest ceiling out of these 3 young players.
For sure.
I'd probably say Patrick has a slightly higher ceiling than Io just because of his size,
yeah,
and his shooting ability from three. And then Io is down there. But the good news is like we're seeing progression as Bulls fans in all 3 of these players that, hey, they could be starters or rotation players in the years to come. And they're pieces that are on decent contracts. Now, obviously, Patrick Williams, there's a lot left to discuss for him because he's going to go into a contract that's going to be a lot more expensive. And if he keeps on playing at this level, I think we're both in agreement, he's going to get somewhere between $20 and $25 million. per year, probably.
I'm probably going to let him walk.
So that
20 to 25 million.
I don't know. I don't know. He's really turning me around. Like, I mean, that game against the Heat was phenomenal. I mean, if you could put up a few more of those, I agree with you. Like, let's see it in a row. You know, greatness is being consistently good. But
if he can put up a bunch of 80% shooting games in a row, then yeah, I guess I'm in too. But like, I mean, like, you got to.
There we go.
You know, I think you got to factor out the shooting and assume like we feel he could be a sustainable 40% from three shooter because we've seen it before. And, you know, so what I would really want to see to feel good about him, and he did this in the Miami game, the most recent one, get to the foul line, like three trips a night, you know, like block shots. I think that's been an improvement this year. He's blocked more shots, you know, play defense, rebound the basketball. Like if Patrick Williams was averaging 7 rebounds in a block and a half a game at the end of the year, or maybe we'll just say like a combined 2 between blocks and steals, and good rebounding numbers, and we felt his defense was good, and he was averaging 10 points a game on 40% from three, yeah, I'd pay him that for sure. If he finishes off the season...
He's definitely been more active, too.
Yeah, he has been, and that's a good sign. But if he finishes off the season and he's, you know, averaging like 4 rebounds a game, which is what he's averaging on the season... I don't know that I'm going to be that excited about it. You know, like there's a certain level of activity I just feel like I got to see from him that has to be consistent. So it's all getting better, though. I'm definitely open to the idea he can sway me. The thing is, the better he plays, the more expensive he gets too. So it's like if he does all the things I named, then maybe now he's 30 million. And I'm still like, yeah, I don't know that I see it. So, you know, that's the tough thing with any free agent, or maybe he gets caught in that restricted market where there's just like no one who's busting down the door for him. And then he ends up on a value deal. So I think with Pat in the future, you just got to play it by ear and see where the market lands. He's not a guy I think I would overpay for, but you know, there's no reason you might have to. Maybe he'll be on a really good deal. Like Kobe White's on a really great deal, right? We think that's a good deal. And Pat could easily end up in the same boat. So I don't want to jump ahead to even guess what the offers might be, because they're going to change so much based on how he plays, you know, the remainder of the season.
I was a little concerned or disturbed by the general venom towards DeMar DeRozan at the end of the Miami game. Like, I'm constantly surprised. In that game, DeMar was, I thought, for the most part outside of the turnover at the end of the game, absolutely fantastic. He had 27 points on 13 shots. He was 9 of 13 from the field. He was 1 of 2 from three, got to the line 9 times, made 8 of them. He was a +5 for the game. I was kind of like, gosh, he had not only that, he had 3 blocks, incredible off-ball blocks that were just kind of like passed over during the broadcast. And I was like, anybody see that or is it just me? Like, my goodness, he was playing incredible off-ball there. And 2 steals. Like, he had a fantastic game. And then you watch the end of the game, there's far more outrage over the turnover that he had when he was doubled than there was on Vooch's, I'm going to play hero ball here with 12 seconds on the clock and do a left-handed drive. I don't know, man. I'm a little confused, bewildered at the general anger towards DeMar DeRozan. Are you sensing this? Am I reading this incorrectly? Do you agree with my assertion?
So I agree with your assertion to start off with. I think that makes sense. Anytime that Vooch goes 3 of 13 from the field and decides to ISO take the last shot of the game, you know, you got to do it. But seriously, I would say this, like, generally speaking, with Zach out, someone just has to be the GOAT, I guess. You know, like, it's the kind of thing we would make fun of Zach for. Like, people would just scream at Zach about, like, having a turnover at the end of the game, you know, after just being the entire reason they were even close. So, I don't know. Maybe with Zach out, they just decided we're just going to be upset about someone else tonight. You know, I would say, like, a lot of that, anytime it happens, be it Zach or DeMar or even in your case with Vooch, you know, like, any of that time, it's just like, when someone misses and it doesn't work and the loss hurts because it's close, like, people just want to blame someone and something. And they just want to say, like, oh, well, if you'd done this other thing, it would have worked out better. You know, because we know for certain the thing you did do didn't work. So we should have just proactively tried to do something else. And to me, like, DeMar DeRozan has been by a million the most clutch player on this team. It's ridiculous to ever say you don't think he should have the ball at the end of a game based on what he's done in his time in Chicago. It's just ridiculous. Like, it just is.
Agreed.
And so, you know, it doesn't mean it's always going to work. It doesn't mean he always makes the right decision. But having the ball in his hands at that point is never the wrong decision. It doesn't mean he's going to do everything right that time. But anyone could have a turnover. Anyone could have a missed shot. Anyone could have a whatever. And DeMar DeRozan has consistently been by far the best player on this team in that scenario. And so, yeah, even in that scenario, maybe he misses half the time, but it means probably the other guy is going to miss 70% of the time. You know, and you can't just get hung up on the time it doesn't work. So I don't have a problem with it at all. You've seen it too much. It's just, and it's just human psychology. You see that all the time. That's why everyone hates the coach and always complains about the rotations and always complains about whatever, because it's always like, yeah, if the coach had just done this instead, you know, that's why when Kobe was struggling a little bit at the beginning of the year and people are like, why is Javon Carter not starting? And I was like, because Kobe White's a better player and we should give him time. And, you know, like, it's just like people just get upset because they're like, well, this thing isn't working right now. If only we had done something else, of course it would have worked. Well, no, probably not. You know, like, you just can't look at things that way. You only get to try it once. You can't compare a known thing to an unknown thing and then say, like, yeah, well, if the known thing didn't work how I wanted, we should have done the unknown thing. I mean, I guess, but that's only a hindsight comparison. Like, at the end of a close game, next game, are you going to say, don't put the ball in DeMar DeRozan's hands without knowing what's going to happen? Like, would you really say, like, DeMar DeRozan should not have the ball at the end of games anymore? Like, it's a completely ridiculous assertion. No one should think that.
Yeah. If the choice is between DeMar DeRozan and Vucevic, and like, I literally laughed out loud. I can't remember who I saw. Somebody had a tweet. It was somebody I respect, too. In the last couple of days, talking about the brilliance of Vucevic and like his high IQ, he's got the highest IQ on the team in terms of basketball IQ. And I'm just like, dude, what are you watching? Like, really, do you really feel that he's a better decision maker than DeMar DeRozan? Do you really feel you feel more comfortable with the ball in his hands than you do today than in Kobe White's hands? In DeMar DeRozan's hands? I don't like it every time he has the basketball on the high. It's like, I don't understand it. I don't understand why people feel this way. It's so weird to me, like, that I could be so different than the vast majority of fans in my evaluation of Vucevic. I think he's a fine player. I think he does a few things really well, like rebound and set picks. But like, people are like waxing poetic about his greatness for essentially setting picks and handing off to players that actually matter in terms of winning and losing. Like, he's not that good. My God, it's just like the efforts to praise him for every little thing he does. And he had some good games. He had a fantastic game in the first Heat game. He was freaking awful in the last one. And that's what he's been all year. You know, like, there's a lot more anger and apathy towards DeRozan than there is to Vooch. And I'll never figure it out. But, you know, we'll see until one of those guys is out of town. And I guess we'll just have to deal with it going forward.
I don't know that there's a lot of anger towards DeRozan. I mean, I think that's very situational to the last game in the last 48 hours or whatever. Like, I don't think that's...
You don't sense a general, like, from the... Especially from the significant and large Patrick Williams crowd all year, that DeMar DeRozan is the reason Patrick Williams hasn't progressed.
I don't know. I don't have those people on my timeline. I guess, like, you do. Like, no,
They exist, and they make points, and you got to move him out of town in order for him to develop. It's so dumb.
Yeah, whatever. Maybe it will help. Wary of it. It might help develop Patrick Williams if DeMar DeRozan is out of town.
Sure,
we'll probably Zach lose a lot more games.
Kobe.
Yeah, but and whatever. I'm all for trading DeMar DeRozan, like, for reasons like that. Not because I'm like, oh, Pat Williams is going to be a star, but like, what are we going to get out of this year? Like, we're probably not going to make the playoffs this year. And DeMar is probably not going to sign an extension here, and we probably don't want him if he does, unless his price tag goes down dramatically. So you should trade DeMar. Like, I'm not against that, but like, and one of the reasons is it will give other guys a chance to shine who will be hopefully part of the team on the next run up towards the playoffs, and that does have some value to them. But I don't think like Patrick Williams is going to be a star because that happens.
Or you could just say, like, hey, DeMar DeRozan still demands double teams. And he still opens up opportunities for other players because he's a freaking good passer. And, you know, when Patrick Williams raises up for that wide-open three, it's a good reason that DeMar DeRozan was part of the input in that situation. That he's wide open because DeMar DeRozan's on the floor. Yeah. And I just disrespect kind of I felt this year, specifically this year, to him, I kind of find nauseating. I don't like it.
Yeah,
I don't like it because he's too freaking good. That game he had on Monday was phenomenal. Not Monday. When was that? The loss to the
Saturday.
Saturday night was fantastic. He was great. He made a key, costly turnover at the end of the game because he didn't recognize a double team. But he was doubled. He was good enough to be to garner a double team. How many guys in this team can you say that consistently?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
All right. To get back to your question about Vooch and his IQ, since I didn't actually talk about that at all, I will just say, you know, maybe a guy whose true shooting percentage is 50.5%, which is like really, really awful. Maybe he doesn't have really good IQ. Like a guy who's taking all kinds of shots that he's not good at hitting and doesn't recognize his own level of ability. You know, maybe there's something lacking in his basketball IQ there. That's what I would say to that. I do think
I'm not saying he's a dumb player. I'm not saying he's a dumb player,
but like a guy who's
the smartest player on the team.
A guy who is consistently very inefficient is probably not a super high IQ player. Like I do think he makes good passes and he can read defense okay, and you know he can move the ball quickly. But
for a center,
but. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything tremendously worth praising there. Like, I don't think Vucevic is whatever. Like, I think he's probably the fifth best player on a good team. And
I agree.
And that's fine. Like, he's actually on his contract now at $20 million. I think he's overpaid, but it's not, like, ridiculously overpaid. It might feel that way in a year or two as he continues to decline. But based on what he's doing this year, like, yeah, okay, you know, it's a little bit more than I'd want to pay, but it doesn't really matter. It's the next couple of years that if he continues to decline, that'll be rough on the books. But he's an okay player. Like I don't have as much like anger about him. I have anger about all the stuff we traded to get him. But yeah, whatever. He's like a low-end starting caliber center.
Yeah. Yeah, he's fine. He's fine. Like I do have a little anger in that, like, I still don't understand how you open up a game on Saturday with an air ball three when no one's within 5 feet of you. Like, come on.
Well, you should love it. You keep telling him to shoot threes. You can be better than
that. Like, let's go.
You just keep telling him to shoot threes, even though he's really bad.
I want him to shoot threes, yes, because it's so important for the team. He's not.
Well, so he shoot
in his
him.
Career, he has not been really bad at it, Doug. He's a 35% career three-point shooter. That's good for a center, and it's a key part of what makes the Bulls go. The whole reason, like, what do you think the primary reason we've looked better recently? It's because, to me, number one, two, and three is Coby White is shooting at an insane three-point percentage on high volume. So much good happens when you're able to spread the floor and have people guarding a guy 30 feet out, which is now what Kobe is demanding, because he can hit that far out at a pretty good rate. It opens it up for everyone else. And we didn't have that before. Zach was not shooting the ball well, who was one of our best shooters. He was shooting poorly. Kobe was shooting poorly. I wouldn't say poorly, but he wasn't shooting well, anywhere near his potential. We had nobody on the team shooting the three at a really high level, and now we do.
Yeah.
With a high volume.
Okay.
And good things follow from that.
Sure.
So, I don't know.
So Vooch is not a good three-point shooter.
The last thing I want
to
talk
about. He's not a good three-point shooter. Stop pretending he is. Just
definitely not this
him.
Year. Okay.
Definitely not ever. He was 1 year. 1 year he was a good three-point shooter. In 12 years.
Okay, let's
one
not
year.
Get,
that's true.
I don't want to go down this rabbit hole.
But then stop saying it. Stop saying he should shoot threes. He shouldn't. He's lousy at it. And if he shoots them and misses them, don't complain about it, because you're the one who wants him shooting them. He's doing exactly what you want him to do, which is put up threes. Like, he's not trying to miss. He's doing his best. He's just not that good
at
it.
I want him to be shooting at a 35%
rate.
Well,
he can't.
He can't, Fred. Not 27.
He wants to shoot it at a 30. He wants to shoot at 100%, but he can't because he's not that good at it. So that's just what it is. Like,
let's go on to some breaking news as we get a little more contentious on this post, right after being so enjoyable for the first 30 minutes. All right, and this is kind of breaking news on our mutual friend Will Gottlieb, the GOATs, Twitter pipeline, or X pipeline, whatever it's called these days. Will Gottlieb, a lot going on here. Rich Paul says on record, it's not Lakers or bust for LaVine. Lays out possibilities, openness to staying if Bulls want to go in that direction. All right, hard stop there. Do you feel it's even remotely possible that we could go down this road, that Zach LaVine will still be a Bull as we go into February, March?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Do you think that's... Can you lay out the scenario where that happens and why that's a good thing for this team?
I didn't say it'd be a good thing for this team. I just said I can easily see it happening.
Okay.
I mean,
all right.
The reason it happens is they can't get anything for him, and they decide it's better to let him try to recoup his value on the floor and then trade him later. Or they move DeMar, and I think if DeMar was out and Zach was playing, I think this run would have still been similar. You know, there's a lot of evidence that kind of shows like those two guys in particular don't have great chemistry with each other. But I think Zach could do a lot of the things with Kobe too. So yeah, I think there's a chance that Zach could play and stay here if they can't get any kind of offer for him. And in that scenario, I think he just has to come back and adjust and play differently. You know, like I've said before, and I was talking to your buddy, Paulie, and he was for some reason riding me on like, oh, like I said all the stuff, like I want Zach being a super ISO player or something like weird. And he's just like, Zach doesn't play the right way. And I said, like, well, you know, I've said for a long time, I want Zach playing like Klay Thompson. Never take more than like three dribbles. You know, like you should take two dribbles on the way to the basket and that's it. And maybe he comes back and plays in that role. And, you know, you got Kobe kind of doing a lot of the work he does, DeMar doing the work he does, and Zach just shooting the hell out of the ball from three and taking the open drives. So we'll see what happens. You know, I think because he asked for a trade, it's more likely than not that he'll still get traded. But it's not crazy for me to think he'll be back. And the way they've handled the situation doesn't seem nuclear. Like, Zach's not gone out and, like, ripped on the team. He's not said, like, I won't play here again. Like, there's none of the nuclear stuff has happened that makes me feel like you couldn't come back from this situation. And the team playing really well while he's out maybe, you know, enhances his willingness to come back a little bit. So we'll see what happens. I still think better than that he's gone, but I don't think it's insane to think he might still be here.
The one note from Will, and Will, in fairness to Will, this is a kind of like an overview of the Sam Mamick information and article, which I found very interesting. What the Bulls would want Reeves for Caruso and DeMar. So let's play that one out. Let's say the Bulls make that trade, send Caruso, DeMar to the Lakers for Reeves. I would find a Kobe, LaVine, Reeves, P-Will, Vooch starting lineup to be pretty interesting. Like, I think that's not a horrible lineup that I would be fine with, actually. The more I'm kind of contemplating that. What say you? Are you a Reeves guy?
I think Reeves is fine. Like, I don't think Reeves is necessarily better than Caruso. It's probably
he's not worse, better than DeMar either, than Caruso, but or he's DeMar. Younger.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who else you get in that deal, right? Like, is D'Angelo Russell the other guy coming back in that deal? I haven't seen it. I mean, from a salary matching perspective, there's got to be someone else coming back. It's probably D'Angelo
is
the guy
exactly.
Who matches salary. The best. I think if you got Rui, even though he's not having like a tremendous year for the Lakers and kind of seems a little bit out of what they're doing to an extent, like he might be another guy that would fit in well with what the Bulls need in terms of minutes on the court, right? Like we don't have a lot of power forward minutes and he could fit in there and he'd also give us another shooter. So yeah, if you make that kind
exactly.
of move, I'd be excited to bring him in too. We'll see. I mean, that move overall gives you something you could build with as an average team, right? If you move DeMar and Caruso and you got back Rui and Reeves, and then you've got now and you end up keeping Zach, and now your youngish group is Zach, Kobe, Rui, Reeves, and Vooch, and then you figure out a way to move on from Vooch or just bring another center. Like, okay, you've now maybe navigated this water where you're like a fringe playing team, but you're a fringe playing team around like 25 and 26 year olds and 27 year olds instead of around 30, 3-year-olds, and there'd be something to that.
I think you can make the argument, obviously Reeves is not a better player than DeMar DeRozan, but I think you can make the argument he's a better fit for the Bulls than DeMar DeRozan if you have Kobe and Zach and you know, players of that ilk on the team, because he is first of all, he's 25, so you're immediately getting younger on a pretty good contract again, which will allow you to have other assets for other players. And he shot 39.8% from three last year. I mean, you know, DeMar has never touched that in his career, so he's going to extend the floor for you, create a lot more space. He's not shooting it great this year. He's at 35.8%, you know, 30%, 36% for his career. But I think he's a guy with a high shooting ceiling. And then suddenly you have Kobe White, Austin Reeves, Patrick Williams, three guys that can extend the floor. And if you keep Zach, another guy who can extend the floor, suddenly you got shooting everywhere. You got shooting galore. And I don't know, I'm kind of excited about that thought. What say you?
Yeah, it might work out. You know, the thing I'll say about Reeves, and I've not watched a ton of Austin Reeves, but, you know, I'd imagine playing next to LeBron and playing next to AD, the type of defensive attention you're getting is maybe a little bit limited. A lot of other people to follow around. You know, we've seen him, though, create off the dribble a lot. You know, I watched him in the playoffs mostly, and he had a really nice playoff run for the Lakers last year. But he's never really put up a lot. He doesn't have a lot of, like, history to him, right? This is his third year in the NBA. He didn't shoot particularly well his first year. He's not shooting particularly well this year. He shot pretty well his second year, like you said, almost 40%. But the attempts were not super high and were probably mostly wide open, is my guess. So I don't know if he's really a cracked shooter or not. And I mean, I would tend to guess maybe not. Like, I don't think he's a bad shooter. He's maybe capable. But I don't know that I'd think, like, oh, yeah, he's a guy you think of as a shooter, especially when you're not going to have star players soaking up a lot of attention. So we'll see what happens. I'd still do it. Like, I think it would be a nice thing to figure out a way to reset this team, still be close to, like, a 41, 42-win team, and just be built around 25-year-olds. Like, that would be – I view that as a success if they were able to flip DeMar and Caruso into Rui and Reeves and then keep Zach or flip Zach into other assets that are, like, similar caliber but also still young in age. And then, you know, be a playoff contender but be built, you know, with all guys sub 27 years old. That would be something where you'd be like, okay, you know, like, we now have a chance to get better. We have enough time to get better and make other moves to get better.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think that's a great way of putting it. We're getting better. We're moving in the right direction. We just got to get younger. And I think in that trade, you're moving Caruso at his height. I'm assuming, too, you get a draft pick in exchange for that, because DeMar and Caruso, I think you can make the argument, are probably more valuable than Reeves alone. And you're right. You're going to have to get a big contract in return. That contract will probably be
D'Angelo Russell.
D'Angelo Russell, which is an expiring, pretty large expiring, give you some cap flexibility and a decent player for this year. I kind of like that. And if you can get a draft asset or multiple draft assets outside of that, I only think they have one left. Hey, man, let's start cooking with gas and run with that in that direction.
Yeah.
Now, we're already almost at 40 minutes to wrap this baby up as we bring the bus in a little bit. I want to go a little bit, look ahead. So before the 6-game streak hit, the Bulls, you had made the prediction that you thought they'd go 2-4, I believe.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I said 2-4, you said 0-6.
I said 0-6. Right now, I think they're trending towards, believe it or not, right between that. Let's look at their schedule right here. Give me 1 second. So they have they're at Philly tonight. I think we're both in probably agreement they're not going to win this game.
Probably feels like a loss. Not thinking about it too deeply.
In a pretty ugly fashion, I would probably say. This is a team we've never really matched up well for a long time, and Philly's on a pretty good run right now. The Lakers game is one that might save it for you. Wednesday at 8 o'clock at home. You know, they could win that game. It's not out of the realm of possibility. Who knows if their best players are playing. I don't know off the top of my head. And then you could salvage your 2-4 record, but it looks like 1-5 to me. What say you?
That seems more likely than not, without having any idea if Philly is going to decide to rest someone for no reason whatsoever because they didn't play yesterday. I think that would be, you know, I would guess they lose the Philly game, and, you know, I'd say the Laker game, you know, they'd be underdogs, but I don't think they're crazy underdogs. So, you know, we'll see. And they're at home in that one, so they have a shot at it. You know, I think from my perspective, what I said, and, you know, I still think this makes sense, is I think they'll win one of two against Miami. And then you've got four games where I think, like, your chance of winning any of those four games collectively averages around, like, 25-30%. So you should get one of them. And so it's like, you know, if we played Philly on the road 10 times, like, I don't think we'd go 0-10. You know, we'd maybe go 1-10 or 2-10.
We'd go 1-9.
Like, there's still, yeah.
I think we'd go 1-9 and or 0-10, to be honest with
you. You still have, like, a chance, right? And if you played the Lakers 10 times at home, I think you'd win at least four. You know, so, like I said, it's just like the overall odds, even though you're under, you don't lose all the games you're supposed to lose, was the point I made. And in the Bulls have played better, you know, better. They almost won two in Miami. You know, they took Milwaukee to overtime in the first game of those.
Yes.
You know, so they've really been playing pretty good. And so, yeah, I don't know that I'm, like, super confident that they're going to beat the Lakers or the 76ers and win one of these next two games. But if I still had to predict today, I think I'd still guess they win one of those two games somehow.
Wow. I'm going to say they're going to go 0-2, but as I said before, this six-game streak that I predicted an 0-6 record, I think we're going to feel good about them, and I think that will continue. We're going to look back, and in all honesty, the last six games, the only game I really felt horrible about the team was the Denver loss, because Denver was, first of all, had Jokic kicked out in the second quarter. They were missing several of their best players. It was like, that was an embarrassing kind of ass-kicking. That was the only one where I felt like, wow. I mean, they lost that game 114-106, and I think the final score wasn't as close as the real result. But every other game that you highlighted, I mean, taking, you know, the Bucks to overtime, the two Miami games, they played way better in Miami. I thought they deserved to win, especially the one on Saturday. I thought they played great. So I've been really excited about the general direction of the team, and even though they're going to go 1-5 in this horrible stretch, in my opinion, they have the Spurs next, the Cavs, the Hawks, the Pacers, Philly twice. Well, I guess it is pretty ugly. Charlotte twice. It's going to be pretty ugly until they get to Charlotte twice. So, looking for the remainder of December.
Well,
let's just call it right now. I want you to call out their record from this point forward: Sixers, Lakers, Spurs, Cavs, Hawks. It's a long homestand. Lakers, Spurs, Cavs, Hawks, Pacers, Sixers are all at home in December. And that takes us to the end of the month.
How about this? Given that we are theoretically going to record on Mondays, how about we just go from here until next Monday? So that gives us 76ers, Lakers, Spurs and Cavs. I mean, I feel like they'll win at least two of those games, and I would not be surprised if they win all three except for the 76ers game. But I think they're going to beat the Spurs. Evan Mobley is out for the Cavs, and they're kind of like the subject of trade rumors and Donovan Mitchell going out. And I think they got a bunch of drama. That game feels very winnable, too. And I don't really think much of the Hawks game is after the one I mentioned. But so I think they can beat the Spurs and the Cavs, and I give them 50-50 on the Lakers. So I'd set my over-under at 2.5. But I'll predict.
I'm going to say 2-2. So 2-2, let's get our profit robes on. 2-2 for both of us. Let's hope when we reconvene next Monday, that is the record of the beloved Bull. I think we'll be feeling good.
Well, we'll hope it's 4-0. Why would we root for 2-2? Come on. We predict 2-2.
Well,
we
just
root
because
for 4-0. Let's not be crazy.
Let's be honest. This season, our prophecy predictions are probably more important than the general outcome of the team based on how things are going this year.
It's fun
to
watch
solidify
wins.
My greatness.
It's fun to watch wins. Okay. You know, like, I mean, like, even though this isn't a great draft, there's no one, like, at the top of it that's going to change your franchise theoretically. So, like, this isn't a year to be like, oh, I hope we finish as the worst team in the league and have great odds at getting, like, one of these crapshoot guys. So, you know what? I just root for wins, root for enjoyment, enjoy the games, you know? Like, it's so much better when you can enjoy the game. So that's what I'll be rooting for.
I don't know how you could be down about this team, the way Coby White has played recently. I mean, when he was hitting those threes in the fourth quarter against Miami, I mean, my gosh, that was something, dude. And this is like, you know, eighth, ninth, tenth game in a row where you're feeling like, holy cow, this kid is taking another step. So, like, you know, regardless of the general state of the team and general apathy, I feel from sports radio, like, I had a tweet, which I'm very proud of, which is, like, kind of grown weary and tired of hearing this crap from, you know, from the guys who run sports radio, like the Bulls, who cares? And it's like, well, I think there's a lot to be excited about here with the progression of some of these younger players, starting with Coby White. It's worth your attention. It's worth your time to at least discuss it. If we're going to talk about the Bears for 23 out of 24 hours a day in that tire fire that's been for the vast majority of the last decade and a half, then let's talk about the Chicago Bulls for 5 minutes. You know, come on. Anyhow, on that note, let's bring the big red bus in. Doug, it's always good to talk to you, my friend. We're already almost at 50 minutes. God bless you, my friend, and let's go Bulls. Oh, anything else you wanted to add? Or is that good? Any final, anything else?
I got nothing.
Anything
now.
You want a pub?
Now, right, now we've okay. got to have a whole ending again. I mean, after this. I was fine to close it out, but now it's all awkward.
All right, let's go. All right. Let's go Bulls. Go Bulls. Let's pretend again. That didn't happen.
Yeah, pretend.
All right, brother.
All right.
Okay, man. Take it easy. Bye.